Funding for Think comes from SMU's Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What gave Alexander the Great the drive to vanquish a swath of territory from the Greek city-states to Egypt, Persia, and much of the Indian subcontinent? This 4th century BC warrior was born the son of a king and took the Macedonian throne at the age of 20 after his father's assassination. Alexander himself would live just another dozen years or so, but in that time he managed to spread his influence over much of the ancient world as he brutally but strategically invaded foreign territories. So how did people view this legendary conqueror in his own time? Philip Freeman is Quali Professor of Classics at Luther College in Iowa. His newest book is called Alexander the Great. Philip, welcome to Think.
Thanks so much.
Is it any easier for you as a historian to see this almost mythological figure as a flesh and blood human being than it is for the rest of us?
I don't know that it is. I grew up with stories of Alexander the Great, reading picture books about him when I was a boy. So to me, he's been a mythological figure for as long as I can remember. But I very much wanted to try to dig down and find the real man behind the legend.
So let's start at the beginning. His father was King Philip of Macedonia. His mother was a snake worshiper.
Yes, she was. Well, she, among other things, yes. she was from what's now modern-day Albania. She married Philip when she was really quite young. And then Alexander was born not that long afterwards in Macedonia, which is in northern Greece today.
Now, Philip had multiple wives, and one of the ways that Alexander would later follow was that he would use marriage as a way to sort of ally himself with particular territories.
Oh, absolutely. Whenever he, it was a joke in ancient times around it, when Philip was alive, that whenever he wanted to go to war, he would get married in order to build a new alliance.
So Alexander didn't see Philip a lot as a kid, but there's this legendary story about how he got his horse Bucephalus. Can you tell us about that?
It's a wonderful story, and it happens on the northern slopes of Mount Olympus one summer. And there's this horse, Bucephalus is the name, a giant black stallion, and he's been brought to the court of Philip, and the Macedonians loved horses. And they all wanted to buy him, but the problem was he couldn't be tamed. He couldn't be handled. He was just too unruly. And so even Philip sent him away and said, no, forget it. We can't buy this horse. But 12-year-old Alexander said, wait a minute, Dad, I can handle him. And Philip laughed at him. Everyone did. But Alexander noticed that what scared Bucephalus was the sight of his own shadow. So he took the horse's reins and he turned him into the sun so they couldn't see his shadow, calmed him down, and then jumped up on his back and rode across the plains and back again. And Philip was so impressed that he said, you have to seek other kingdoms. Mine is just too small for you.
And how long was that the horse that he had with him throughout many of the battles that he would fight later?
Yes, it was, all the way to India, where Bucephalus finally died and Alexander founded a city in his honor.
So what sort of influence did Olympias, his mother, have on him?
Well, she was... she was very important in Alexander's life because, for one thing, Philip wasn't around very much. Alexander's father wasn't there very much. But her goal in life was to get her son on the throne, which by no means was a foregone conclusion. Philip had other possibilities, and they had certainly had their ups and downs. Philip and his wife had their ups and downs. So I think she influenced Alexander with a respect for religion, because Alexander, wherever he went, he was always interested in the religious beliefs of the people that he went to, that went beyond just politics and ingratiating himself with the locals. He was a very devout, very religious person.
So despite his royal pedigree, I think this is interesting, he didn't live exactly a pampered existence as a child.
No, he didn't. He had a couple of tutors who were very tough. They made him go on, he and his friends go on long marches through the night with no meals. He trained to be a king and trained to be a warrior from the very beginning.
What would that training have been like? And we'll talk about his time with Aristotle in a few minutes, but what would the training have been for a young boy or a teenager in those days?
Well, as soon as he could walk, he would have learned how to ride a horse, for mm-hmm. one. He would have learned how to pick up a weapon, how to fight. How to march long distances without complaint. It would have been a very intense physical education, besides the education you mentioned with Aristotle.
And he was not physically like a big, imposing guy.
No, that's a great thing. One great thing about Alexander is he was a little shorter than average. Later on in Persia, they had to use a footstool to help him so his feet didn't dangle from the throne of the Persian king. He was slightly smaller than normal, yeah.
And this was interesting. I did not know this before I read your book. Despite his reputation that lasts to this day as a brutal warrior, he had this sort of softer side. He loved to read, and he was an expert lute player.
Yes, he was. That's one thing the sources, even the hostile sources mention, that he was a pretty good musician. He loved to read from the very beginning. He carried a copy of Homer's Iliad around with him and slept with it under his pillow in all of his travels. He was a very well-educated man.
What form would written materials have taken at that point?
At that time, mostly they would have been papyrus scrolls, so a sort of leafy substance that came from Egypt mostly. And you would have unrolled it as you read. You unrolled it with your right hand and rolled it up with your left.
So not really convenient. You'd have to really care about it to have it with you at all times.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
What did he learn from Aristotle?
Oh, everything. Aristotle was one of the most amazing people in all of history. And if you read Aristotle's writings, he talks about everything from meteorology to embryology to ethics to political constitutions. Alexander studied with Aristotle for several years. Medicine, he certainly would have learned medicine. Aristotle's father was the doctor in the Macedonian court, and so that's how they had the connection and how Aristotle got the job. But he would have absolutely learned everything that there was to know from ancient Greek culture from Aristotle.
And were they emotionally close?
Well, that's a good question. He seemed to be. When he went on his journey of conquest, he sent Aristotle back different letters with descriptions. He sent him back different biological samples. So from what we can tell, they did get along.
So Alexander the Great was 19 or 20 when his father was assassinated. And although literally there have been 2,400 years of conspiracy theories, your sense is that this was essentially just about the jealousy of a spurned lover.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I can't rule out Alexander. I certainly can't rule out his mother. But I would bet you, well, the story says that it was a young man who was spurned by Philip after he grew a little older, wasn't quite so attractive, deeply shamed by the actions of one of Philip's generals. And so his name was Pausanias, the young man. And best guess is that it was just plain anger and jealousy that caused the death of Philip.
But it is this big dramatic scene because Philip, he's throwing this party and there's games and sports and things going on, and he sort of, stands up to address everybody, and then this kid comes running at him with a knife?
Well, exactly. Philip had planned an invasion of Persia. He's throwing this big party just before he sets off. He walks into the theater at Vergina, and there is this young man who is a former bodyguard of Philip. That seems to happen a lot in history. And the bodyguard, this young man, Pausanias, stabs Philip right through the heart. Philip collapses and dies with Alexander right there watching him.
Would it have been openly known that he had male lovers, or was this something that people then felt they had to keep secret?
Oh, no, they didn't have to keep it a secret at all, especially in Macedonia. It was that they didn't really have the ideas of sexual orientation and identity that we do in the modern world, at least as far as we can tell. So it would not have been a secret at all.
So you mentioned earlier that it was not a foregone conclusion. Alexander was not necessarily the heir apparent to Philip. So what threats to his own accession to the throne did he have to eliminate right after Philip's death?
Well, what happened was just before Philip's death, actually only about a year before Philip's death, Alexander and his mother were exiled, and Alexander was removed from the succession line. Philip thought the better of it after a few months, brought Alexander back. There really weren't a whole lot of other options at the moment. Philip had married again and had a new son, but he was just an infant, so there weren't a whole lot of choices. So when Alexander came to the throne, actually it wasn't a foregone conclusion. He had to gain the backing of the army to do it. But there weren't a lot of rivals at that moment to Alexander.
What was Philip so upset about?
Well, that's the question. I wish I knew. it seems to be that the nobles around him were saying, you know, Philip, your only viable heir is this young man, and his mother was from Epirus, you know, from the mountains of Albania, not really Macedonian. You know, I think we can do a little better. And so Philip dumps Olympias, gets rid of her son for a little while, Alexander, And that seems to be the motive. But then Philip changes his mind.
So they would have wanted, even back then when they were intermarrying and everything, they would have wanted a fully Macedonian-blooded king.
Yeah, I think they did.
Mm-hmm. My guest this hour is Philip Freeman. He is professor of classics at Luther College and author of the new book, Alexander the Great. We'll resume our conversation with Philip in a couple of minutes. You can join us by calling 1-800-933-5372. You can also be part of this by sending email to think@kera.org. Joining me now in the studio is Jeff Whittington. He is senior producer of Think, host of Everything, Anything You Ever Wanted to Know. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for moving that. Chris, you were eclipsed by the globe.
Sometimes I have a globe on my desk when we're talking about, although this globe is not helping at all because all the place names
changed.
Have changed.
We're changing a lot faster back then, but they're still changing. The globe is changing, and KERA will continue to bring you stories about that. I mean, there's going to be a new country in Southern Sudan in a few months.
I know, and I will need a new globe.
We will see. There you go. And, you know, new globes have a price tag, just like public radio has a price tag. You get to decide what that price tag is. And you can call 888-694-6931.
I actually pay for my own globes, just for the record.
Yeah, you do. Chris does pay for her own globes, if you were wondering. You can also contribute to this radio station online at kera.org.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number, if you'd prefer to do it that way. Want to thank some folks who have been making contributions this morning and early this afternoon. Thanks to Chelsea Guidry in Arlington, TJ Lampkin in Keller, Carlo Velasco in Richardson. Thanks also to Wes Frierson in Grapevine, Todd and Nikki Sullivan in Wiley, and Brittany Mason in Dallas.
We also heard from Juan Carlos in McKinney, Srinivasan Charakvarthi in Murphy, Lawrence Autry in Dallas, Mac Mullins in Dallas, and Vijaya Shri Venkatraman in Plano. Thank you very much for your contributions. We really appreciate the fact that you've stepped up today. We are really close to just $100,000 left to raise, $101,744 left to raise. It'd be great if we could do this today, just personally, because I volunteered to be here at 6 a.m. in the morning.
You have a vested interest in getting this finished.
We'll get there. We'll get there because many of you are joining now because we are so close, and we really appreciate that. Thank you so much for coming through for KERA, the station that comes through for you every single day. Every day you tune in to the Think Show Monday through Thursday, you know that you're going to find some interesting conversation. Today's show is no exception. As a matter of fact, this topic today is so interesting personally to me. I'm concerned that we might be in that territory where you're afraid that you'll miss something if you call or go online to join.
That's why Jeff and I are here, to lull you into realizing that you have... we'll be back with Philip Freeman at like 23 after the hour.
Right.
That gives you plenty of time.
Yeah.
That's 3.5 minutes to make your call or go online, do your entire transaction without being disturbed in any way. So now's the perfect time. We do, by the way, have copies of Philip Freeman's new book, Alexander the Great. If you're a fan of the ancient history of the world, a fan of the classics, this is a really great study of everything, and it's written in a very conversational way, so you don't necessarily have to have, you know, a master's degree in the classics to get it and to enjoy it.
No, just thumbing through the book, Chris, I got drawn into so many stories. You know,
there's a lot of juicy nuggets in
Alexander
here.
Freeing a woman because she had the guts to throw one of his captains down a well after she'd been assaulted.
That's
by
moxie.
It is, you know, and he said, hey, I like your style. So, you know, it makes this legendary, mythical figure a real human being. And I think it's really, well, it's just par for the course for the show. If you appreciate what we do here on Think Show and on KERA, please go online and support it at kera.org or call 888-694-6931.
You can get your copy as part of your contribution if you make a donation at or above the $120 level today. We have $101,744 left to raise in this fundraising campaign. As we were saying the last few days, be the 44. Get us down to a nice even number or choose any amount. 1-888-694-6931 or online at kera.org. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
Your You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Philip Freeman. He is professor of classics at Luther College in Iowa. His new book is called Alexander the Great. Join our conversation by sending email to think@kera.org or call us at 1-800-933-5372. Philip, what would Alexander have done to prepare himself strategically and also physically before taking hundreds or thousands of men into battle?
Well, strategically, he had sent some generals ahead into what's now Turkey, just to sort of get the lay of the land. Physically, what he did was go to war. He spent the year before he invaded Persia going north in the Balkans all the way to the Danube River and crossing it. And he did this to secure his northern borders because he knew he would be gone a long time in Persia. But he also did it to train his army, to get them in shape, to get them to trust him. So he took them on long, difficult forced marches, just as he had been put through as a young man. And they came out of it at the end of a few months as a very tough army.
What was combat like in those days? What was the balance between like projectile weapons and hand-to-hand fighting?
Well, it depends where you were. There were a group of soldiers in the Greek world, heavily armed infantry called hoplites. And they were they had swords and shields and spears. Mostly it was done up close and personal. It was not the sort of distant sort of combat that we often have nowadays. When you killed somebody, you saw the look in his eyes when you did it. What Alexander and Philip did, they changed the rules of combat a little bit. They started using something called a Sarissa spear, which was 18 feet long. In order to get at the opposing lines. They also did things like have the first professional engineering corps as part of an army. So they were very innovative as far as military matters.
What were there rules of engagement to any of those wars? Was there such a thing as prisoners of war, or was it simply every man for himself on either side?
Well, mostly the latter. But there were plenty of occasions. For Alexander, example, when he beat the Greeks, he beat the Athenians more than once and pardoned them. He didn't do this out of the kindness of his heart, but because he wanted to use the Athenian navy. So there were prisoners of war, but really it was a brutal business for the most part.
And and often what would happen is he would take all the men of fighting age and simply execute them, and then he would sell all the women and children into slavery. Was that uncommonly brutal at the time, or would any conqueror have done the same?
Oh, that was standard operating procedure. That was sometimes generals would conquer a place and then they would forgive people occasionally, but not very often. Julius Caesar did the same thing when he conquered Gaul. Alexander did this, especially when people resisted him. If a city surrendered to him peacefully, if a whole country like Egypt surrendered to him peacefully, he didn't kill anybody. He charged them a lot of taxes, but he let them live their lives in peace. But when he got to places like Afghanistan and he ran into a whole lot of trouble, he turned into a very brutal general.
What did he do after he had conquered a place to try and keep those he had subdued in line?
Well, what he would do, first of all, would be appoint a governor, somebody to manage the taxes of the place. He would put one of his own officers there with a garrison of his loyal soldiers to just remind people who was in charge. So he, in one sense, he tried to preserve the structure that was there, the native structure, whether it was Egypt or Iraq or Turkey or wherever. But he also used his own military to enforce his will.
And then did all these conquered territories, how did they pay him whatever it was he decided they owed?
Oh, it depends. It depends what they had. The gold was always welcome. It was a favorite. But you have places like Egypt along the Nile River where your typical peasant wouldn't have a lot of gold. So he would pay in crops to the local garrison, and then that would move its way up to the provincial administration.
He did not have an easy time initially conquering Egypt because he had to get through Gaza first. Is that right?
That's right. He crossed into what's now Turkey, Asia Minor. He had a battle where he was almost killed right at the beginning. He fought his way down the coast of Turkey, went all the way to what's almost what Syria now, had a huge battle at Issus. Conquered the city of Tyre in Lebanon after a six-month siege. And then you think everybody would have learned to get out of his way by then, but he came to Gaza. and the Gazans refused to surrender. And so he tore their city apart after having a very tough time and getting injured, too.
Yeah, he was injured multiple times. I mean, it's funny that he lived 32 or 33 years because he sort of had nine lives, if you think about it.
Oh, he did. He did.
And he didn't hang back in the way that more modern generals might be, you know, with their troops, but not out on the front lines.
No, Alexander was always on the front lines. He was one of those generals who was there if soldiers were having a hard time, if a donkey cart broke down. He would ride back, get off his horse, help them fix it. He wanted to inspire his men, he was the first over the walls. There was a place in India that a city in India, he was literally the first one over the wall. Then the ladder collapsed, and he was stuck there pretty much alone, fighting off the whole city until his men could rescue him. He got badly injured there, too.
We can talk in a minute about his delusions of grandeur, but did he have delusions of invincibility?
Well, I don't know that he thought he was invincible, but there is pretty good evidence that he thought he had divine ancestry. He thought that Zeus was his father, which sounds silly to us. But in the ancient world, there were a lot of stories of people who had gods as fathers. And there was a story that Olympias had been gotten pregnant by Zeus. And I don't know how much Alexander believed this. I tend to think he really did believe it to a certain extent. But I don't think he ever thought that he was invincible. He always knew he could die at some time.
He also didn't discourage anyone else from believing he might have divine parentage.
Oh, no, that's very useful. Very useful propaganda to have people think that you are the son of a god.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that Philip before him had tried to do, at least in terms of he would make statues of all the gods and then throw one up there in their midst that looked like him.
Yes, Philip, his father, had established the statues of the 12 Olympians at Vergina, north of Mount Olympus. And then he stuck his own statue up there as sort of the 13th god. People didn't take that real well.
Hmm. People also didn't take it well when Alexander started dressing like a Persian. Is that right?
That was true. When Alexander invaded the Persian Empire, his soldiers, his generals, everybody was behind him. But they thought it was going to be to establish a new Macedonian kingdom. But Alexander realized, I think, before most of his men, that in order to rule the vast Persian Empire stretching from the Danube to India, he had to adapt to Persian ways, had to make use of Persians, had to take on certain Persian customs like dress, like having people bow down to him. And that did not go well with many of his men.
We have an email here from Tom in Arlington who writes, had Alexander never lived, would the Greek culture still have become the dominant Western model, or would Persia and Babylon have moved westward and influenced Europe?
You know, that's a great question. My answer, my best guess is if Alexander had never lived, the Greek culture, we would still know about it. We would still know about Socrates and Plato, but it just would have been one in a number of important ancient cultures around the Mediterranean. I think Rome still would have been Rome. They still would have done what they did. But I don't think that Greek culture would have been nearly as important without Alexander. And, of course, Christianity, the early writings of Christianity, one reason the new religion was able to spread as it did was because there was a common language that could be used. So without Alexander, the world probably would have been a very different place.
Yeah, that's so interesting. It was, you know, 350 years later, but Jesus spoke Aramaic, and that was such a small regional language that it might not have gone anywhere?
Right. I mean, he spoke Aramaic. You know, that would have been really useful in Syria and in Palestine, but not a whole lot of other places. It was the ability for people in Rome and Ephesus and Athens and Alexandria to read Greek that really allowed Christianity to spread as fast as it did.
The second part of Tom's question is, had Alexander lived to a ripe old age of 60 rather than dying so young, would things have been much different in the long run? The way he's partitioned his empire to like-minded generals seems to have sealed his desired influence even after his death.
Well, you know, I think if Alexander had lived to be 60 or 70 years old, which was not at all unusual in the ancient world, it would have been bigger. When he died, Alexander was on his way to conquer all of Arabia. He had India. He wanted to conquer the rest of India. He wanted to conquer the steppes of what is now Russia. I think the empire of Alexandria would have been enormous. It could have stretched, you know, maybe even to the borders of China. What would have happened once it was over? Well, I think if Alexander had had longer, he had an infant son when he died, a couple of them actually. I think he could have established a dynasty that would have lasted, but his premature death threw all of that into turmoil.
One challenge he would have had, and in fact did have even during his short lifetime, was that after a while, after years and years of this, his soldiers were tired of fighting.
They were. They had, when he invaded the Persian Empire, when he crossed and landed his army at Troy on the shores of the Aegean, the soldiers had no idea they were going to be gone from home for 12 years. And so after they had trekked all over modern-day Turkey and Egypt, Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, and Uzbekistan, and a whole bunch of other places, they got to India, and they said, enough, because Alexander wanted to keep going. He wanted to follow the Ganges all the way down to the Bay of Bengal and maybe even keep going after that. But they said, we just can't do this anymore. And so they forced him to turn around.
Do you think some of his tenacity had to do with his obsession with reading Homer?
Oh, yes. He saw himself as a modern Achilles, certainly, an unbeatable son of a god, or Achilles, a goddess in his case. But still, that divine spark he was inspired to be a great hero.
Philip Freeman is my guest. He's professor of classics at Luther College in Iowa. His new book is called Alexander the Great. We'll resume our discussion with Philip in a moment and invite you to join us on the phones now by calling 1-800-933-5372 if you've got a question or a comment. You can also get to us, like Tom did, via email to think@kera.org. For the next couple of minutes, we're going to be talking to you about our fundraising campaign. We are doing our very best. I should say you are doing your very best to bring us under the $100,000 mark, which is we have a little bit more than that left to raise in this fundraising campaign. Thanks so much to we have $101,584 left to raise. Thanks so much to Cynthia Oliver in Dallas, Eugene Lee in Plano, Sanjoy Mukherjee in Plano, and Jennifer Ugier in Richardson. Thank you very much for your contributions.
1-888-694-6931 online at kera.org. Chris, we have about $101,000 and change to go. We'd love to get under 100,000 left to go here shortly. Your call right now or your online contribution at kera.org will help make that happen. You can get your very own copy of Philip Freeman's incredibly readable book, Alexander the Great. You know, when you talk about ancient history or Greek history or Greek, you know, the implication is, oh gosh, that's not something that's going to interest me, perhaps. But you're listening to the show, people are calling, people are writing emails in. We know that this is a special audience that listens to this public radio station. And you know what? This is a special book. This book is incredibly readable. It's incredibly entertaining. It's fascinating. The conversation today is fascinating. I'm captivated. I almost didn't make it in here to do the pledge rate because I was so riveted by the conversation.
You were having a driveway moment at your desk.
I was. I was having one of those moments where I'm just so drawn into the conversation. I can't wait to get back to the conversation.
Philip's a great storyteller, too, which helps.
He sure is. And we were talking about, wow, I imagine how incredible one of his classes would be. Well, that's what you're getting. We're bringing you, in a sense, kind of master classes from some of the greatest
what a nice way to look
professorial
at it.
Minds all over the country.
Joe Nye yesterday?
Exactly. We bring you really the best lecturers and professors and experts in their fields from universities all over the country. 4 days a week right here on Think, where you get to call in, you get to email in. And in a sense, that education that you're getting, we're not charging $50,000 a semester for it.
And no tests.
That's right. There are no tests. We're not charging $25,000. We're not even charging $5,000 a semester. We're charging whatever you want to give because you get to decide if it's worth something to you. If you want your very own copy of Philip Freeman's book, Alexander the Great, we can thank you with a copy when you join the station at the $120 membership level. You know, your $120 contribution today and, you know, the maybe five or six others will really help us get a lot closer to that $100,000 mark, and we can continue on our way.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. We love it when you go online to make your contribution at kera.org. Choose an amount that's right for you. You know, we all pitch in at the amount possible. That's so that nobody has to do it alone. You know, it's when we eat dinner at our house at night, everybody puts their own dishes in the dishwasher at the end of the night. If you had a small plate of something, you got a small plate to put away. If you had five dishes, then you put five dishes in. And that way, you know, we all contribute what we're able to do and according to, in some cases, according to how much we listen. We're not asking you to give more than you can, but just about everybody listening finds value to this station. We know, because you've got 100 other choices that you could flip to, and you listen to KERA. We're delighted by that. The amount that you give to the station, that part is your choice, but we do ask and hope and expect that everyone who listens makes some kind of financial contribution every year at KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931.
If I ever come over to your house, Chris, I'll make sure and put my dish in the dishwasher. If you ever come to my house, you're going to have to do your own laundry, though, because everybody does their own laundry at my house.
At my house as well.
Very good.
Actually, Matt does my laundry.
See? It's not true.
But I do the cooking. So, the kids do their own laundry.
So put your dish in the dishwasher, do your laundry, and take responsibility for the fact that you listen to the station, that you get something out of these conversations. This conversation with Philip Freeman on Alexander the Great is one of the most interesting conversations that I think we've had in a while on the show. I'm a huge history fan, and you know, maybe you're not a big history fan. Maybe you like public policy or geopolitics. Well, we've covered that a couple of times this week. Maybe you want to talk about trends for children in America. Well, guess what? That's going to happen next hour with Peggy Ornstein, author of the new book, Cinderella Ate My Daughter.
This book is talked about everywhere. And if you've got a daughter, know a daughter. It's both terrifying. Peggy Ornstein is also very funny. It's a really well-written book. And I'm really looking forward to the conversation. So we can switch in the 2 hours of things from talking about Alexander the Great to talking about a very different sort of royalty, the little Disney princess.
Well, the point is we're going to cover something in a month, in a week, definitely in a year, that you really identify with, because that's the show is created for you, so that it's interesting and entertaining and informative for you. All we're asking you to do is give something back. Give a little back. Call 888-694-6931 or contribute at KERA.org.
Down to $101,534 left to raise. Love for somebody to be the 134, maybe, to bring us down to a more rounded number. But whatever amount you can do is greatly appreciated. You can make your contribution with a credit card, with a debit card. You can set up a sustaining membership so that you can make a pretty substantial gift at a very affordable price for your budget. We can hear from you at any time, but especially right now at KERA.org online or on the phone at 1-888-694-6931. Back in just a couple of minutes with Philip Freeman talking about Alexander the Great. Thanks.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's informal courses for adults, dedicated to enriching lives for 55 years. How about enriching yours? You can learn more at smu.edu/CFP.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is professor of classics at Luther College in Iowa, Philip Freeman. His newest book is called Alexander the Great. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372 or via email to think@kera.org. Let's go to the phones now, and we will speak with Robert in Dallas. Hi, Robert.
Hi. Chris, I just want to say you have an amazing show. The subject is great, and I listen every day, and just thank you for bringing what you bring to Dallas.
Well, thank you.
And, I was curious if your author would agree. I'm sure he's read John Prevost's book, Envy of the Gods. And in that book, John Prevost kind of sets up Alexander as having, at the start, the Greek idea of what a king is, and someone who's capable but holds the consent of the governed and is on somewhat equal footing with his subjects. And he contrasts it with the Persian idea of a king, which is that of a deity or a semi-deity who has more of a slave-master relationship with his subjects. And he talks about maybe as Alexander went deeper and deeper into Persia, that he began to assimilate this Eastern idea of a king, and that eventually led his troops to become frustrated with him. And maybe would your author agree that that was the greatest influence, maybe, in Alexander beginning to think of himself as a god?
What an interesting question. What do you think, Philip?
Well, I haven't read the book, actually, but I think what you say is right. Alexander's idea of kingship, the Macedonian kingship, was really the first among equals. He had a great deal of power, but he had to govern with the consent, at least, of the nobility. But when he moved into Persia, he did meet a whole different type of royalty, And the great king of Persia was somebody who was quite separate from his people, quite deliberately separate, and did look at them as subjects. And Alexander did take on more and more of that persona the farther east he moved. So I think you're right.
When there were insurrections and plots moving up from within his ranks that threatened him, was there any sort of system of justice to determine guilt and innocence, or was it just a matter of instantly sort of off with their heads if they were suspected of threatening
him?
Well,
sometimes he did cut off their heads or stab them through with a spear. But what the normal procedure would have been, in which he did several times, was to bring them in front of his army and have a tribunal and let the soldiers decide. And I'm sure Alexander pulled a lot of strings behind the scenes, but that was the normal way to do it. It wouldn't have been what we think of as a trial.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Next, we go to Michael in Garland. Hey, Michael.
Excellent program. I've always admired Alexander more than any other historical figure, and I just wanted to ask your author if he was familiar with a book that was written, I believe, in the 1980s, author Mary, I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, Renault, R-E-N-A-U-L-T, and it was a biography of Alexander, and covered, I remember Bucephalus was his horse, and I believe one of his wives or his wife's name was Roxanne. And it was mostly about his relationship with his lifelong, I guess in modern terms, would be his lifelong best friend, who was also, I believe, one of his generals. I was wondering if he was familiar with that particular person and what he thought of that biography, if he's familiar with it.
That's the nature of Alexander, right?
Yeah, that's Mary Renault. I did read that. It was, gosh, over 20 years ago. A wonderful book. It was an amazing writer. And I think if you're interested in a fictional introduction to Alexander, that you could hardly do any better than Mary Renault.
Okay, so let's talk about how Alexander finally met his end. Once again, the ancients talked a lot about conspiracy theories, but you don't think that he was poisoned?
I don't. I can't rule that out. But he is in Babylon after 12 years of hard fighting, after being injured, grievously injured many times. He suffered what's probably malaria for a number of years. And so he wakes up in Babylon one morning. He has a terrible chill, and it gets worse and worse. He gets a fever, and pretty soon he realizes he's going to die, that he's not going to pull out of this. I think it probably is natural causes. It could have been typhoid. It could have been all sorts of things. But it is possible that that one of his generals, a lot of people said that he was poisoned. Some people even say that Aristotle had a part in it, but nobody really knows for sure.
And the reason that you think that it's not poison or not likely to be is that they didn't really have long-acting things that would take 2 weeks to kill you.
Yeah, well, they did have. They were actually very good at poison, but but I tend to resist conspiracy theories, mm-hmm. unless that's the most reasonable explanation. And there are lots of reasonable reasons. Well, there are lots of good reasons for thinking that Alexander did die of natural causes.
So what happened after he died?
Well, he's on his deathbed, and he does not have a son who is of age to take over. So his generals all gather around him and ask him, to whom do you leave your kingdom? And Alexander, with his last breath, says, to the strongest, and then he dies. It's a great scene.
Hmm.
So what happens is all of the generals who heard that think, well, that's me. and so they all decide that they're going to fight, and there's, you know, lots of fighting, lots of bloodshed. The generals divide up the empire. His general Ptolemy, for example, who he'd known for a long, long time, took over Egypt. And founded a dynasty which lasted all the way to Cleopatra.
You know, it's interesting reading this book to realize the Ptolemies always seem to have named their women Cleopatra.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Cleopatra, the Cleopatra we know and love, is just, I forget, it's the seventh or something. She's been along with a lot of Cleopatras.
Do you think, I mean, is it reasonable to look with admiration at somebody who was such a relentless, ruthless killer? Should we at least admire the fact that he did what he set out to do? What's your sense of him as a human being?
I think that I can't help but admire certain parts of him and be repelled by other parts. We didn't even talk about some of the really, truly nasty and mean things he did on his campaign. But how can you find a guy who's 20 years old and sets off to conquer the world and actually does it, the world, at least the world as he knew it. And he won battles against the greatest empire that the world had ever known. He was always outnumbered, and yet through sheer determination, through brilliant military skill, he beats them. And he never, ever, ever gives up. He's just the most relentless man, I think, in history, and he absolutely hated to lose.
You mentioned that you have known these stories. I mean, you're a professor of classics. You've known these stories since you were a boy. Was there anything that you learned when you set out to write this book specifically that you hadn't known before?
Oh, I learned so much. My goodness, I've written books on Julius Caesar and Alexander, and I can't begin to tell you all the things I learned. But I think what really impressed me the most about Alexander, I'd always known he was a great military leader, but he was actually very good at civil administration, politics, and running the nitty-gritty of running an empire. He was really quite good at it.
How did he keep track of what was going on back at the home front when he was out there fighting battles?
Well, back when he was on the Indus River, he had messengers constantly going back and forth all over his empire. He knew everything that was going on. If there was a tribe that crossed the Danube River, he knew about it within a few weeks and repositioned his armies to take account of it. So he had a tremendous messenger service.
Toward the end of his life, drinking was kind of an issue for him. Do you think that was a response to all the pain from those injuries that may or may not have healed well?
Yeah, I think probably so. I mean, drinking and drunkenness was a great tradition among Macedonian kings. It was expected that a leader would host his generals and drink deeply, sometimes every night. But he did seem to really take to it more at the end of his campaign, and I think that probably was a response to pain, maybe a little bit of despair at having to turn back in India. So I think drinking is another factor in his early death.
The last thing I want to ask you, Philip, is which of the ancient accounts of Alexander's reign is the most interesting for you to read or the most fun?
Well, the best one to read is a historian called Arrian. And his, I think he's pretty truthful as far as we can tell such things. But Plutarch's Life of Alexander, not so much as a biography as a moral study, is really quite wonderful, too. There's a number of really good ancient sources on Alexander, but I'd have to pick Arrian.
Philip Freeman is professor of classics at Luther College in Iowa. His new book is called Alexander the Great. Philip, it's been a really interesting hour. Thank you so much for spending it with us.
My pleasure.
Thanks to all of you who have been listening for this hour. Thanks to all of you who have called in or written questions. Thanks especially to those of you supporting the station financially during this hour. We can't say it enough. It really is important. It really does matter to us. When you make your contribution this afternoon at or above the $120 level, if you want to read Alexander the Great, you can do that and receive it as your thank you gift. So get in touch with us at KERA.org or at 1-888-694-6931. Jeff Whittington, we are at $100,474 left to raise. We can absolutely get below the $100,000 mark in the next couple of minutes.
Yeah, if you'll call 888-694-6931, or if you'll go online to KERA.org and make your contribution, we can get there just with your $100 gift or your $120 gift, or maybe you can do a $200 contribution to the station this time. Maybe you did a $100 contribution last winter, and this year you can do a $200 contribution. Well, it really would make a huge difference if you did that. Not only would you be renewing your membership, which is an annual membership, but you'd also be increasing your gift a little bit, which actually is something that we love when listener members do, because it means that you really appreciate what you're getting from the station, and it also helps us meet this goal. We have the overall goal of $700,000, and as Chris mentioned, just $100,474 left to raise in the drive.
1-888-694-6931 is the telephone number. You can also go online to KERA.org. If you have never made a contribution to the station before, it may just be that you assume that other people were out there giving for you or just giving, or that we don't really mean you. But in fact, we do mean you. We mean you who are listening to the station. It may be really easy for you to just stop and change the way you're thinking and make a contribution. Maybe you just haven't really considered it. it before.
Yeah, it's easier to go ahead and make the contribution than it is to continue to resist.
And tell yourself, give yourself reasons for why you shouldn't do it.
Yeah, when you listen and you listen through the membership campaign, you know, we're asking you to do your part because it's really important that you do your part for the station you rely on so much. You get this feeling of ownership. You become part of the group of people, the really fantastic group of people who make public radio a reality. In a sense, you become sort of a funding producer of the station when you join the station. You become part of the station. You can say, I'm KERA because I made a contribution by calling 888-694-6931, or I did it online at kera.org.
Thank you very much to Janaki Polaru in Louisville, Linda Vu in Garland, Frankie Crawford in Sulphur Springs. Thanks to them and to you. We are down now to $100,264 left to raise at kera.org and at 1-888-694-6931. This is your source for NPR News, 90.1 KERA, Dallas-Fort Worth, Denton, 100.1 K261 CW Tyler, 88.3 K202 DR Wichita Falls, 99.3 K257 EV Sherman.
No matter where you listen, though, you're listening to your public radio news and information station for North Texas. We're thrilled to be able to bring you this service wherever you live in North Texas or in the world. If you listen online at KERA.org or if you download the Think podcast, we heard that in January over 100,000 individual Think downloads occurred. Those are absolutely free to you and to anyone in the world who wants to listen to this show, but it does cost the station something to provide that, to edit, produce, and post those podcasts every day. It takes a person, a producer here at the station, a significant amount of effort and time, and that's something that we want to make available to you, and it's great. It's great that it's absolutely free, but just think, if we charged a dollar for each of those downloads, we'd only have $200 left to raise in this membership drive because that's all that's left, $100,200. So do your part right now if you do listen to the podcast or you listen online or you listen to the terrestrial signal by calling 888-694-6931. Or do your part online at kera.org.
And in fact, if you're a podcast listener, in the comments section, if you make an online contribution, make sure and let us know that you use and listen to the podcast and you value it, because those little comments are read by someone here at the station and they're important to us and we care about what you think. So let us know that this is a service that you want us to continue. 1-888-694-6931 is our telephone number. You can also go online to kera.org. If you're in a place where you can make a $275 contribution or more today, you could choose the Jeff Whittington has titled the Ken Burns Super Pack. This is three different collections of Ken Burns DVDs, complete collections, complete Civil War series on DVD, complete National Park series, and the complete baseball series. All of them, it's 22 DVDs in all for a contribution at or above the $275 level.
Yeah, if you love Ken Burns or you have friends or family who love Ken Burns series, this will make a great a gift for someone or a series of gifts for someone or for yourself. You listen to the station, so you should support it for yourself. You can do it online at kera.org, or you can do it on the phone at 888-694-6931. We heard from Kelly Rodriguez in Frisco. Thanks, Kelly. Thanks to Kay in Arlington. Thanks to Mary Thomas in Dallas and Martin OTA in Dallas. Thank you so much to each of you. We'd love to be able to thank you, but you've got to call 888-694-6931 or contribute at kera.org.
Oh, we are so close to jumping down beneath the $100,000 mark. We are at $100,264 now. Your contribution will bring us here, hopefully by the end of this hour, before we start the next hour with Peggy Orenstein talking about Cinderella Ate My Daughter and the hyper-girly girl culture that has taken over for school age and preschool girls in America and what it means to them as they grow up and to all the rest of us as we try to raise them. Join our station right now. Join the effort that makes public radio possible in your community by going online to kera.org.
What if all the little princess girls grow up and want to be princesses, like, you know, as grown-ups?
That's like, a lot of pink in the like universities.
The next generation of college graduate interns we have in here would be, you know, in their princess tiaras and stuff.
Well, you know, if they're good workers, I guess it's okay.
I guess we'll have to ask Peggy.
We'll have to find out if that's going to happen or not. I'm not sure.
Stay tuned.
It actually takes on a different form, and we'll talk about that as girls get older and become women. Join the station now. Make sure that this content continues at 1-888-694-6931. You can also make your contribution online with a credit or debit card or set up a sustaining membership at kera.org. Thanks.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.